Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 100th episode of the Charity Charge Show. Been looking forward to this day for a while here. I think that I'm not always one to just on its surface appreciate milestones or really kind of look at them as anything super special. But this is pretty cool to be here for the 100th episode, especially because I have my good friend and guest, Grant Trahant, founder of Cause Artist, as well as running and starting the Charity Charge podcast for us a few years ago. You really got in my head to start it. So I figured, Grant, I wanted to give you the honor and the respect of being the 100th guest. Thanks for being here.
Truly an honor, my man. I truly appreciate it. Let me, even though I'm on your pod, let me ask you the first question. What have you got out of doing 100 episodes and 100 interviews, because there's a very, very rare amount of shows that make it to 100. So kudos for you to, you know, staying consistent. It's all about that, man, and staying motivated to wake up and do it, you know, multiple times a week, even multiple times a day sometimes to get these interviews out. So congratulations to you, man. But what'd you learn from 100 episodes?
Well, as I sit here just reflecting on that question, I'd say that the top thing is you just really realize the realness and the type of commitment that it takes to run a nonprofit organization. You know, obviously, our audience being nonprofit executive directors and founders, that's been the majority of our guests. Obviously, I've had people that are focused on like CFOs of nonprofits or development side, but it's, you know, pretty much all been people that are working at nonprofits and founders of nonprofits. And I think that this doesn't just apply to the nonprofit sector, but it's just kind of life in general. And obviously what social media has, I think, put a even increased heightened sense on is often just the facade that we feel we need to put on, both as individuals, you know, in our personal life and our work life, and then also, you know, how we build up the brand or reputation of our company or nonprofit. And I think nonprofits and the people behind them really struggle because you know, this spills over into a mental health perspective. Kind of where I'm kind of blowing up this whole thing to say that I've just found that I've had a lot of people on the podcast that privately, I mean, on it, some episodes, but also like before we hit record or after we end recording, you know, really just say to me, hey, I haven't had a moment to just kind of sit here and be interviewed and reflect and have a real conversation. Yeah. And I think it's given me a lot more. You know, at first I thought just like kind of know-how, like learning the kind of the mechanics and nonprofits. And once you get around enough of that or in the process, obviously, of growing Charity Charge too, you know, you kind of learn the science of starting and building and scaling an organization, you know, which is kind of the academic side of it. But the real side of it, I think, is just the challenges that people running nonprofits face and the stress and the pressure. You know, when you're running a nonprofit, obviously you're out there constantly fundraising to fulfill your mission. And you've got a variety of stakeholders that can be individuals, your board, can be, you know, foundations, it can be city, state, national governments that are funding whatever your funding source is. And a lot of times it's kind of this fake it till you make it type of thing. And then ongoing, it's always that way. And I think that there's a lot of stress trying to keep up, with this image of being like a picture perfect organization that never makes mistakes, and being that leader. And especially if you're the ED, you know, I think in some respects it's harder than, you know, running a for-profit business, and not enough respects given to nonprofit leaders because they've got, you know, financials that are going to be publicly disclosed. They've got a board to answer to. They've got a whole gamut of supporters, you know, again, individuals, corporations, grant makers, what have you, plus all of their staff, plus whoever the constituents, you know, the base that they're actually serving to provide the mission. So it's a challenging job. And, you know, I have a lot more empathy and respect.
It's kind of like running a public company a little bit, because there is that transparency that they have to abide by, you know. And it's, I'm not, you know, with public company CEOs are sort of judged by the share price and other metrics for sure. But, you know, I wonder what the metrics that, you know, these nonprofits sort of measure their success by. Obviously, like, donor revenue is like one, of course. And that's the one that's going to keep you, you know, sustainable. But there's a lot, like you said, there's just a lot more.
I think that's a really
different good pressures.
Point. Yeah. And I think that that's a good point that you're bringing up, which is figure out as the leader of the nonprofit and obviously with your board and any other stakeholders you have, what is success? Because I think it's easy to, especially, I mean, this is a very emotional game. I mean, if you're, you know, kind of insert the mission, but if you're out there to feed the homeless in your community or house them or whatever, it could feel like never ending and you're never doing enough because the need is so great. But I think that if you can be focused on metrics as well, you know, if you hit your goals and you do what you're committed to doing, you can also feel really good at night. And, you know, I found a lot of nonprofits, you know, are just emotionally drained because the need is so great, you know. And that's kind of the interesting thing about nonprofits is, which I think is talked about, but not enough. The greatest thing in the world would be if nonprofits went out of business, you know?
Yeah.
It'd mean that the mission is solved, you know, it's over. We've cured this. We've fixed this for good, but it's just not the cycle of the world and life that we live in for that to be a reality for most causes and organizations. It's ongoing and it's ever changing, and the need is ongoing and ever changing.
Yeah. Just like when you said, you know, if they're, whether it's education or homelessness or hunger, you know, a lot of these communities really depend, you know, on these nonprofits. So not only, you know, do you have to worry about your board or worry about donors and those relationships, but also like if your nonprofit goes away, not in the way we're thinking, when the problem is solved, but whether it's, you know, COVID hits and then there's lack of donor dollars or some government funding gets thinned out, and part of that, you don't sort of get government grants that you were sort of depending on. You know, there's people in your community that could go hungry, you know, they could not have shelters to stay in. So there's also that emotional weight of like, you know, people depend on certain organizations a lot more than others.
Yeah, I think it's really true. And it's something that, you know, I don't have the answers to, but it's certainly provocative, which is, you know, the ongoing role of the nonprofit ecosystem as a whole and how it continues to stay in existence as well, right, throughout generations and people's propensity to give. A lot of these, obviously, nonprofits like NGO, non-governmental organization, I mean, they're started because there's an unmet need. It's kind of a fascinating concept. I mean, quite frankly, just the whole like business model of how this exists, right? And then how it's how it's funded. And, you know, it obviously plays a larger question then. It's like, what is the role of on all different levels, you know, local, state, national, and whatever the world for that matter, but like, what is the role of government and what is the role of citizens in that and corporate America or corporations in general? So
kind of, and you talk to point. You come to both sides, because you've talked to, you know, small nonprofits, big nonprofits, and I think the one thing that they, maybe not all, obviously all is all encompassing, not all, but a lot do have, it seems, have really good relationships with corporations, or that is sort of a first thing that is needed for, whether it's a local nonprofit or even a bigger nonprofit, to have that relationship with the business community. How have you seen that just through your conversations and obviously just through running Charity Charge, but I guess how much corporations and nonprofits need sort of each other to kind of do what they both need to do, one from a CSR side, right, from a business point of view, but obviously nonprofits get donors from a lot of angles, but the business community can do a fairly good job and support a lot of these nonprofits in a big way.
Well, the way I'd actually just kind of answer this question and attack it is, how can the nonprofit think like a corporation and almost be one, right?
Yeah, but still for sure. Think like a startup.
They're not. Yeah. And hopefully think like a big, you know, well-run, yeah, profitable corporation. And that's more and more the model. And in some ways, sort of the model that Charity Charge took. We're set up as a public benefit corporation, but I know, especially like our early advocates and interns and employees, you know, Alexandra always summed it up really well. Like, she was attracted to this because it wasn't necessarily a nonprofit, but it was helping nonprofits, but it was kind of merging this nonprofit and for-profits to more and more of that hybrid model. So that's how I think, you know, right now the sustainable nonprofits have been thinking, right? Which is not just relying on the traditional corporations as donors or partners, but trying to figure out how they can really think and act and be like a company so that they can have in the nonprofit industry, earned revenue.
You know what I saw this year? Interviewed a few people that, one example, Shay Yaleen, really cool company, really cool founder, basically kind of, you know, so like a beauty brand, mm-hmm. But they started as a nonprofit, you know, they did that for like 10 years. But the founder, she was like, you know what, we kind of did all the hard work already. We have our supply chain built out, right? We have a consistent employee base. Like, we have our ingredients. We know how to make this thing at scale. Yet, you know, she would go all these conferences and try to get people to buy stuff at wholesale, you know, and try to always telling her story and, you know, trying to get things. And she was just like, well, why don't we just go to like the direct to consumer, mm-hmm. and just be a business, right? And so I actually noticed the past couple years interviewing, you know, for-profit founders, they actually started as a nonprofit. And I think that's a really interesting model that I see more and more of, is the graduation to being a business, because you built some of the hard foundational things that a business needs early on as a nonprofit, that you have a lot of those foundational aspects built to run a business. And then it's just thinking about, okay, can we actually make this a profitable business? And I see more and more, you know, nonprofit founders doing that after they get 3, 5, and then obviously that's a long time, a decade. I mean, you're building something pretty, you've done a lot. Then it's just turning on that switch of thinking in a different way. You know, can we make a for-profit business out of this? And it's been cool to see that, man. So I think that's a cool path that some nonprofits could take down the line, is, you know, doing those, you know, have the donors essentially be like, you know, your seed round. Have them help you build the, you know, build this like infrastructure, build the hard work of really getting to understand what the community needs or what your, you know, customers or people need within your nonprofit cause. And then, you know, there could be a for-profit model within that. Not all will be like that, obviously, mm-hmm. but there's definitely some that have graduated to that. It's been cool.
Well, it's interesting you share that. And my perspective, when I was originally kicking around the idea and getting feedback from people in the early days about Charity Charge, was a lot of times people would say, well, why isn't this a nonprofit? And especially when I would go to speak to people that were running nonprofits, they were almost, I actually think they were just jealous, honestly, but it felt like they were insulted, you know, and would say to me like, well, this should be a nonprofit. Like, why are you going to make money off of nonprofits? You know, it's kind of how some people looked at it, which was like a very skeptical thing. But my business advice, and maybe look, there's better kind of learnings out there or whatnot. I think that the acumen of people that have started and scaled businesses, there's just more of that knowledge out there. And I had no clue how to start a nonprofit, but growing up, and I mean, I was still so green and so naive looking back on it, but I at least was surrounded by a lot of business owners as a kid, you know, from my parents, from family friends, from, you know, people just that I grew up from, you know, worked for businesses or had started businesses and all of that. So for me to start Charity Charge, it seemed pretty straightforward as a for-profit company. And I also thought, you know, the idea of starting a nonprofit and originally having to form a board and all of those things, it just seemed so daunting. And I always said and figured, you know, look, I could always convert the for-profit into a nonprofit, but to do what you're saying, to go the reverse, I don't even know how you'd start that. It seems very obviously possible and companies are doing it, but how you spin out assets from a nonprofit and make it a for-profit, I mean, it just seems kind of messy. So my advice is always stay true. And obviously people are partial to what they, whatever kind of provided them success becomes the advice they give out. But if you're interested in starting a nonprofit, I would say see if you can start a for-profit that's doing that mission.
Well, they keep from the founders I talked to, they all keep the nonprofit. Mm-hmm. You know, they still keep that that foundational stuff that they built. They just found a way to use that as an asset for a, you know, for-profit side of things.
Yeah,
a lot of it has to do with training. Maddie Apparel is another one, really great founder in Kansas City. Started an underwear company, and she did the reverse of what we're talking about. She had a for-profit company first, but then started a nonprofit on side of the for-profit company to help with scaling up training for the women in shelters, teaching them how to, you know, sew and, you know, create, work with different fabrics, and all these different things where, you know, it's tough for a, you know, a three-person startup to like employ, you know, all those women. But if you have a nonprofit, you can get, you know, corporate assistance or grant assistance or donor assistance from the community to help that side of things where you can employ more, people through donorship and kind of develop things that way, you know, that helps, you know, the whole ecosystem of the for-profit and then the nonprofit. So it go both ways. You know, you start a nonprofit, then it becomes, you figure it out, a switch turns, and you make a for-profit from it, but they both work alongside each other, you know, whatever, which way you start, they both sort of run in parallel to each other and work well with each other.
Right. Well, and you're seeing more and more of the flip too, with for-profits starting nonprofits as foundations or funds and things of that sort. Let me switch gears, ask you. I mean, at this point, obviously you were the one that, you know, had the idea and really set up everything to get our podcast up and going, right? Never forget that. So you had already started yours. What have you learned?
Mm. Man,
what are some of like the macro patterns and like the trends and the things that you see kind of come up time and time again?
Yeah, well, let me just first say, like, there's so many incredible people doing incredible things around the entire world, you know. And so, you know, one advantage I get is I get to talk to people around the world, and that's been really cool to see, is that no matter where you are, man, no matter where you live, like, people still, you know, they want the same thing for themselves, for their community, for their kids, whatever it may be. Their passions are, the same, you know, whether from India, Africa, Southeast Asia, you know, Delaware, Toronto, Mexico City, wherever it may be, like everybody's problems are pretty similar. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a personal standpoint, whether it's dealing with mental health, you know, whether it's dealing with, you know, economic issues, obviously there's some parts around the world that face different problems and issues, but there's people trying to solve them. Just as people in New York and LA, Chicago, Austin, New Orleans, there's those same people trying to solve problems in, you know, all continents and cities around the world. So it's been really cool to just listen, right? I think that's the my favorite part of all this is just like, you know, I let people just talk, man. I like to listen and understand where they're coming from. Because like you said earlier, when you're building something, you're really nose to the grind, and you know this, you know, better than anybody. It's like you stick your head up and all of a sudden 3 months have gone by and you're like, you know, time sort of, you don't have that time to relax. So I think I like getting people out of that mindset of, you know, whether it's early stage startup or early stage nonprofit or a scaling nonprofit or a scaling startup or a big company, like people work hard building things. And when you get time to relax with them, right, and take an hour out of their day, you know, it's really cool to see them open up, take a breath. And, you know, you hear it as well too, you know, after you get off, you know, they're really appreciative of taking the time. It's like, hey, you know, I never get time to take a step back and look at what we have done, you know, and what we have succeeded at. You know, most is, you know, a lot of founders or directors, it's like, what haven't we done? What can we do more of? But I do think like sitting back and, you know, for lack of a better term, patting yourself on the back and, you know, giving yourself some flowers, so to speak, is a really healthy way to keep building and keep doing what you want to do. And that's part of it, man, because when you lose your passion and your love for what you're doing and building, it really gets difficult to achieve certain things. And so I think it really helps people to sort of relax and disconnect from their day to day and tell people what they're working on, you know, mm-hmm. their successes, their failures. So I've just learned to listen more, man. And I've learned that, you know, people are really creative and we're all very, very similar, man. And it's really cool to see the projects people working on around the world. It's really powerful because, you know, like we all, not so much here in Europe, but like in the US, you know, day to day, it's all kind of bad news and it's like divisive and there's like this pull and tug. And it's just, you know, really highlighting what people are doing good in the world is really fun, man. You know, I really enjoy just showcasing people out there because most of the time they don't get shown, you know, and they don't, you don't get to talk to them and see what's possible for mm-hmm. startup founders coming the next generation, so to speak, both from a nonprofit and for-profit perspective. Like they need to know what's possible, but what they can do, you know, what jobs are even available, right? So like you said, like growing up, you kind of saw, you know, entrepreneurs in your circle, right? But that's rare, man. You know, that's rare. Like I had no idea what an entrepreneur was. Like, you know, like, you know, it was just, they just had different jobs, right? Like,
well, that's interesting you say that. I mean, I think the definition of entrepreneur is broad, but
yeah,
I'm also talking about, you know, our family friend that owned a auto body repair shop.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Man. You're right. No, absolutely. You know him as a mechanic. What
I mean, I'm not talking, you know, we weren't friends.
Yeah, you're right though. You're right. Like I knew many mechanics, but now looking back, it's like, oh, they were actually entrepreneur, right? Because they they just owned, you know, Harry's Tow and Auto or whatever, right? So you're right. No, you're totally right. Like thinking about that is a really good way to think about it.
Yeah, I think the other, you know, thing I'd share, which is just part of kind of a story, and one of the things that has really sat with me, you know, all these years later, is that I was trying to figure out the exact date. I think it was in, I was looking yesterday, I got to just double check my calendar, but I believe it was April of 2018. So not that well, 4 years ago or whatever you want to call it.
It's an Olympics ago.
But that's right. That's a good way to look at it. We were not doing well at Charity Charge. We had had a lot of press and all these things and social media posts and all that stuff. It's part of the facade that I was alluding to in the beginning of this. But we were broke. We had no money in our bank account. It was so stressful. I didn't sleep. I mean, this has been going on for a long time because we started the company in 2016. So here we are, 2 years in. I'm not paying myself a dime. I can barely meet payroll. We are doing the mission. We are, and this is really at that point, we basically just had the consumer card. We hadn't yet pivoted and expanded to the business card, which is really where things started to take off. And I reached out to a family friend's father who had been extremely successful and, well, still operates gyms, really at this point all across North America. And I was in town and I texted him on a Friday evening, said, "Hey, Victor, I'm in town. Is it possible we could get together? I really would appreciate your advice." And he wrote me right back and he said, "Sure, 10 a.m. tomorrow, Starbucks. Anything for family." I'm like, holy shit, I hadn't talked to this guy in a while. You know what I mean? And I just couldn't believe it. So I show up. And, we're just chatting about whatever, and he's sharing different things and stuff. And, you know, I totally opened up about, you know, just where we were at and everything. And he didn't tell me what I wanted to hear, but he told me what I needed to hear. Hmm. And, you know, it was funny, like, he totally understood where I was at because he had been there before, you know, in his own way, kind of in his early years of being an entrepreneur. And one of the things that just stopped me dead in my tracks, he looked at me and he said, "How do you think I can be here? Or why do you think I'm here?" I'm like, you know, and he basically said, "You texted me last night and I'm here at 10 a.m. and I'm wide open for you, because I can make time for you, because I make time for my family and make time for my friends." And he basically started to talk to me about the idea of scale and empowering others and having other people, right, you know, get the operations going, make the right hires, figure out how to set up systems in your business so that you can actually be, as the owner, can be available when your friends and family and other things are needed of you, and you're not just a cog in the wheel and caught up in the day to day. And that was the most important message. Of course, we talked about knowing your numbers and this and that and everything, but it really inspired me to figure out a way to remove myself from the day to day. And the kind of famous lines, so to speak, around it are work on the business instead of in the business. And that was the message, but you can read that in a textbook, but it's totally different when you experience that pain yourself and you feel like you got nowhere to go and nothing's going right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then compounded with the fact that someone who's been there, done that, tells it to you to your face. It's extremely painful.
Yeah.
But it's the type of pain that you need to have as a founder of a nonprofit or a founder of a business, I think, to propel you to actually get motivated and take action, you know, fight or flight. And so that's probably awesome. Kind of one of the non-podcast things, but one of the biggest things. And, you know, now it's kind of helping me figure out, you know, what are the next steps for Charity Charge? What are the next steps for my life? But I think one of my things that I learned through this process of working to create systems and automations, and obviously it all comes down to having the right people to be able to execute. And we've got a great team here at Charity Charge. But one of the things that I also really realized is that you're doing a disservice. I mean, on a bigger scale to the world, but you're doing a disservice to other people. You know, everyone's got a place in this world. And everyone has a place, you know, in their career with contributing and giving. And so by me or by any leader getting out of the way and finding the right people, if they are truly the right people, then they really are fulfilled and they're like living their best version. And then obviously, like, to me, the whole economics of like creating jobs and, you know, hopefully what that can do for people's families and their livelihoods is incredible. But it wasn't about me figuring out a way to get out of the way so that I could be happy and successful. It's such an amplification that it enables other people to step yeah. into these roles and learn. And
it's a great point.
You know, people become entrepreneurs in different ways as well. And if that's people's aspiration, and if even if they work for me, that's great too. But I was an employee, you know, at other places and picked up those lessons. So it might just be part of their training ground and their grooming.
Absolutely.
As well. So that's been probably one of the biggest learnings that have come out of running Charity Charge now for June of 2016, but we were many years in research and development, I like to say, for launching.
Yeah. Yeah. I love just the aspect of, you know, giving time. You know, I always tell people, like, we're all just a great equalizer, right? I mean, if you can give people your time, it's so amazing, man. Like you said, it's so important when you sit down with people and you give them your time. Like, that's, to me, is just worth way more than money, right? In my opinion. And so I think what he did for you, and then you'll pass that along, right? I'm sure you've done the same things in a lot of ways. I mean, you've done the same things in a lot of ways for me, where you've sat with me and, you know, we talked about a lot of things and you kind of gave your, you know, two cents on, you know, an outside perspective on cause artists and other things that I might have been building at the time, you know, and those times, man, are so valuable to me. And I know to others that you probably take the time to do that with. And I think that's something we can all, because we all have something to give, you know, in that time we're with each other. It doesn't even have to either be from a business perspective or, you know, work related or anything like that. It can be, you know, totally different. It could be totally anything that aligns with your life. But man, time is super important to give to people. And I think if you can find a way to give it, you know, in our busy lives, I just think that connection with people is long lasting, right? I mean, how you said that was 4 years ago, you know, you still haven't forget. You probably never forget that conversation, right? In your entire life, you know. That's crazy. You never knew that day that you would have a conversation that you never forget about.
Right. Know? Right. No, I mean, I think what you're saying is really good, and not to cut down on the, I think the other side of it that has been harder is I've definitely allowed myself to get more secluded, as which I think is also a normal thing, because I've realized how precious time is, and I'm so guarded now,
yeah,
of giving up time for anything.
Oh, for sure.
And it doesn't mean that, I mean, it's kind of the opposite with like the story I just shared. I have a lot more quote free time, but I'm filling that with things that I want to be doing.
But right? That goes to my point of like, that's why it's so valuable. That's why when that I mean, you don't think he was feeling the same way? Like, he probably had a ton of stuff to do too. And like, he had a lot of people.
Well, I think he had a ton of stuff he could be doing.
Right. But I'm saying he chose to spend his time. Exactly. With you, right. And just as when you go and you look, like you just said, you know, you're guardy, your time is so delicate. So when you do sit down with somebody, like, think how much more, you know, appreciative that person will be, or even you, right? Because you'll be so much more locked in, because like, hey, I want to get something out of this too, right? If I'm going to spend an hour out of my day, like you said, you're very guarded with your time. Same way, man. I think a lot of people are understanding that, And so that's why I do appreciate when people sit down with me. That's super important to me, man. Cause I know we could all be doing a ton of different things. Right. But right now, me and you are sitting and talking, man, you know, and that's right, like, here, super cool. And we're halfway around the world. Like, what's more crazier than that? You know?
Right. Well, it's great, man. I really appreciate you, and thank you for making the time for us all these years at Charity Charge. And of course, starting the podcast and getting us to this 100th episode.
Yeah. That's awesome to see, man. It's really cool, man. And just,
and thank you. I mean, what I'd like to do is, it's not happening obviously on this one, but figure out a way for, I don't know if we do it for 101 or whatever, but we should do, maybe we do some sort of recap or kind of do something to thank all the prior 99 guests for being on here. But
that's a cool idea.
Yeah. It seems like, I guess it was just kind of, in some ways kind of effortless. I don't know. I mean, you opened it and I really appreciate it, but it doesn't really feel like a milestone. It just kind of became part of my week.
That's
having,
awesome.
Having conversations. So.
Man, if you can get into that flow though, man, like, hey, that's,
yeah,
it's immense, man. It's huge. It's huge.
Love it. I'm going to wrap this one up. Anyone interested in finding Grant, go to causeartist.com. Causeartist.com. Grant, thank you so much for being a guest on the 100th episode of the Charity Charge Show.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks for everyone listening. Give a shout out to my mom. Love you. Your birthday is coming up, and we wish you a very happy birthday. Take care until the next episode.